From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis from the Korean Peninsula. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Korean Context. I'm Jenna Gibson. With North Korea launching several missile tests and a nuclear one as well, within just the last month or so, and with rhetoric flying back and forth between Washington and Pyongyang all the while, it is easy to get caught up in the rising tensions on the peninsula and forget one of the key issues that should underpin how we interact with North Korea: human rights. Olivia Enos, a policy analyst at the Asian Studies Center at the Heritage Foundation, follows human rights issues closely. So I asked her to sit down and chat about how human rights can fit into the policy puzzle, especially during this period of heightened tension. So, Olivia, I want to really thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. This is a really important issue that I know you care a lot about, so I'm glad we were able to talk today.
Well, thank you for having me, Jenna.
So there are a couple of things that have happened recently, a lot, actually, in the security sphere when it comes to North Korea. But there have also been some important developments on the human rights front that people may have missed. Just a few days ago, the House of Representatives passed a bill reauthorizing the North Korean Human Rights Act, which will now move on to the Senate. And there's also something that you have written about recently, which is the possible reorganization of the State Department, which includes the elimination of the Special Envoy position for North Korean human rights issues. So with these things in mind, and especially given that North Korea is in the news a lot for its nuclear and missile provocations recently, how do you see the importance of things like reauthorizing the Human Rights Act, given the tensions that are going on right now?
Yeah, thank you for asking. I think that one of the main things that gets lost when North Korea is testing missiles or conducting nuclear tests is that not only do you have sort of these security challenges going on, but you also have these longstanding human rights issues going on. And I think that any U.S. policy toward North Korea is incomplete if it only looks at the security side of things, and frankly, if it only looks at the human rights side of things. I think one of the broader challenges that often gets lost is that actually a lot of the national security concerns and the human rights concerns are very much so linked. And so I think Congress looking at passing the North Korean Human Rights Act, the House passing it, and then also now Senate is going to have to look at it. I think it sends the message that the U.S. still views human rights issues as a top priority, especially since North Korea is, you know, considered probably among the Trump administration's top, if not the top, foreign policy priority right now. And so I think that if the Trump administration wants to round out their policy, they should definitely encourage a look towards some of the human rights issues as well.
So you just said that these things are in some ways very much linked. Can you expand on that a little bit? What kind of links are you talking about?
Yeah, definitely. So I think that you wouldn't have a nuclear-clad and missile-possessing North Korea if you didn't have a compliant population. And in large part, you have this compliant population because the Kim regime uses the threat and actual abuses to ensure that the North Korean people stay silent. So certainly the three generations policy, where three generations of a family can be sent to a political prison camp for the alleged sins of one individual, would be one of these. Public executions is another. The tight grip that the regime maintains on its information access is another means of restricting people's knowledge and their ability to make decisions. And so I very much see the fact that the Kim regime has these weapons programs as, to some extent, a result of the human rights abuses that they exact against their people. But I think maybe an even more direct example of this would be that the Kim regime actually diverts funding that could be used for feeding its people toward its millions upon billions of dollars in nuclear and missile weapons program spending. And so I think that there are a lot of different ways that the administration could pursue human rights policy that advances many of its national security concerns.
Given the emphasis lately on pressure, extreme pressure, however you want to call it. And with President Trump at the UN last week really pushing for strengthened sanctions, pushing for more pressure on the regime to change its ways. So how do you see human rights fitting into the sanctions regime as it stands now or in the future? It's rarely mentioned explicitly in sanctions. Is there a way to fit it in and bring human rights into what President Trump and others are saying is going to be an extreme pressure policy?
I think that using sanctions on human rights grounds would be a really wise move for the Trump administration. And I think actually it would advance their policy of maximum pressure and engagement. I think there are a couple of different ways that this could be done. There was a really positive move under the Obama administration where Kim Jong-un himself was sanctioned on human rights grounds. This was unprecedented. And of course, I think there were 10 other entities that were also sanctioned. But it was sort of regretful that we didn't see those sanctions followed up with additional designations in the Obama administration. And now we're several months into the Trump administration, and we don't see any new designations here either. And I think we've heard, you know, repeatedly from State Department folks and others that there are going to be these additional rounds of sanctions. And of course, there have been additional rounds of sanctions, but none that I'm aware of on human rights grounds. And so I think that this could be one area where the Trump administration could close the gap. And I think the best way would be not to do sort of blanket sanctions measures, but to use targeted financial measures that go after specific individuals who are known for committing human rights abuses. These could be people who oversee the camp, people who are part of entities that supply the materials that make it possible for the Kim regime to carry out these human rights abuses. But it could also have to do with some of the foreign laborers abroad, where the forced laborers are in these other countries. Perhaps we could target the entities who are employing these laborers to make sure that you're not having human trafficking occurring willingly at the hands of other governments and basically putting money into the private coffers of the Kim regime as a result. So I think that's another potential area of opening. But I do think the policy goes beyond sanctions, too.
I'm really glad that you mentioned the overseas laborers, because that is a big issue lately. The last two rounds of UN sanctions have tried to put a damper on this practice. And I know, I believe several countries, including, I think, Kuwait, recently said they are kicking out or severely cutting back on the North Korean laborers that they're going to accept into their country. Do you see this as a tipping point of some kind? Are we finally getting some momentum around the world for some of these human rights issues?
I think it's definitely a positive step in the right direction, but I think it's just the beginning. I feel the same way, and maybe this sounds too critical, but I feel the same way about if you just institute sanctions, because I think that that doesn't make a complete policy. I think a lot of times people look at North Korea and they say there's no policy options. Everything's been tried, but that's just not the case. I think that there are a lot of additional areas where we could either hone the measures that we already have in place or start something afresh. Some of these areas include improving information access in North Korea, which of course the North Korean Human Rights Act would do. It also includes calling out China for forcibly repatriating North Korean refugees. I think this has been underdone, and if it is being done, it's being done behind closed doors. I don't think this is something that needs to be done behind closed doors. I think we should directly be calling out China for aiding and abetting in human rights abuse of the North Korean people. But I also think that there are strategic areas, for example, in contingency planning, where we could be looking more to what are the human rights and humanitarian considerations that are at play. I mean, these types of issues build out a more comprehensive strategy toward North Korea that recognizes the salience of addressing human rights issues. And so I think going beyond that, perhaps this is an opening, as you said, the foreign labor is being removed, but maybe we can go even farther than that.
I'm also glad you're bringing up China, because one of the most powerful events I've ever attended in DC was one that you put on, which featured several mothers, North Korean women, who had defected from North Korea and settled for a time in China, had children there, and then when they made their way to South Korea, they were unable to bring their children with them because they had been in hiding, they didn't have documentation, they would have been repatriated. And in some cases, their children didn't even have documentation, so they couldn't bring them with. And they're now trying to lobby the Chinese government and other governments to do something to help them reunite with their children. So I know that China plays a huge role in some of these issues, aiding and abetting, as you say. So how can we turn that around? What can we do to pressure China, not just on the nuclear program, which we're trying to do, but also on some of these human rights abuses?
Yeah, I think China is definitely not the silver bullet to addressing North Korea, but I definitely think that it could be useful in U.S. policy to more directly call them out when they're not doing what we want them to do. And China repeatedly says that they're making concessions or says that they're going to actually help to address whether it's the nuclear issues. I don't think they've ever made any commitments on human rights related elements of our North Korea strategy, but I think that they absolutely should be called out. I think oftentimes we're very timid in our diplomacy, thinking that if we call out countries, especially countries that we need to help us on issues as large as North Korea, that somehow they're not going to be willing to work with us anymore. But the reality is that when you study how pressure is applied and how it works in a diplomatic situation, especially in the context of the U.S.-China relationship, I think popular pundits make it look like China has the upper hand and we are sort of beholden to their whim and caprice. But I don't think this is the case. I think we can be more direct. I think we should call them out, especially when they're forcibly repatriating individuals back to North Korea, where in some cases they face almost certain death and almost assuredly they will at least serve time in prison. I mean, the persecution is unbelievable. But I think that there are other diplomatic tools the U.S. can use. For example, the Trump administration put China this year on Tier 3 in the Trafficking in Persons Report. I think people didn't expect that this would happen. This is a really positive step. And I think that's one additional way we can call out China. But it didn't sour our relationship. It didn't ruin everything. But it called a spade and said what China is doing is wrong. And a huge part of the reason why China was placed on Tier 3 in the Trafficking in Persons Report was because of trafficking of North Korean women and children.
So one thing I mentioned earlier was that you wrote recently for Heritage about the reorganization of the State Department, and specifically the elimination of the Special Envoy for North Korean Human Rights Issues. So can you tell us a little more about your thoughts on this and some of the suggestions that you laid out in that piece?
Absolutely. So I think that, for a long time now, stemming from the North Korean Human Rights Act, the Special Envoy for Human Rights in North Korea was created. And now the Trump administration, as part of their State Department reorganization, they eliminated the position. And I think that, unfortunately, the elimination of the position sends the message that the Trump administration is not focused on human rights issues. But I think that they have the potential to sort of redeem that if they were to fold the responsibilities into the Special Representative for North Korea policy, which is currently held by Jo Yoon, but change the name, first of all, to Special Representative for North Korea Policy and Human Rights, but more than a name change, because we all know name changes don't work in Washington, we would make it so that there would be congressional oversight to make sure that the Special Representative is carrying out very specific duties. So I think one potential duty would be to identify individuals in North Korea who are committing these human rights abuses and refer their names to Treasury and make sure that they're actually being designated. So that would be a primary role of this new Special Representative. A second role would be, because this person would be playing a national security policy role and a human rights role, they have the potential to sort of bridge the gap between what is presently a false dichotomy and separation between national security and human rights issues. So they can work on things like the contingency planning issues, which they're already a party to, but also represent the human rights concerns and the humanitarian issues that need to be factored in. I think they could also help with resettling North Korean refugees. All of these really important tools and elements of U.S. policy that we have at our disposal. But I think it has the potential to actually elevate the issue, because as I recommend in the piece, it should be of ambassador level rank. It should have congressional oversight. All of these things that would make it a really effective position that guarantees the focus and the spotlight on some human rights issues too.
So Olivia, I'm really glad to hear all these things you're saying about the importance of these human rights issues, because I really agree with you that these things are incredibly important, but sometimes they get buried under more security focus or more, you know, seemingly more immediate issues. So I really appreciate all the work you're doing in this space. Before we go, is there anything else you would like to say? Any closing thoughts?
Well, I think one facet that does get overlooked in human rights policy, and I'll just add this sort of as an addendum to everything, is the issue of religious freedom in North Korea and persecution of not just Christians, but people of all faith. I think that there is a real role, especially as State Department is being reorganized, and it looks like the International Religious Freedom Office may actually be upgraded in some respects. There may be roles to work cross-departmentally, even within State Department, to make sure that North Korea is sort of a front and center issue. I think so often people look at North Korea and they say it's a closed society. We don't have policy options. We can't do anything. But the reality is that there are all these different nodes of government that are working on different facets of human rights issues, some really exciting new policy, especially in the information access space. And so I think finding those areas where there's convergence so that you can take a whole of government approach toward North Korea, especially under such pressing times, I think that could be really valuable for the future. Hopefully it will help some North Korean people too.
All right. Well, once again, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. And again, thank you for shedding light on these important issues.
Thank you, Jenna.
Thanks, everyone, for once again joining us here on Korean Context. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. Please remember to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. And feel free to drop us a review if you like what you heard. See you here again next week for another great episode.